From the caravan of migrants at the southern border to oral arguments before the Supreme Court on the travel ban, we're talking refugee resettlement on the show this morning. Good Monday morning, and live from Studio 5, this is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross, and we are always live on the radio at 9. Also, make sure to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and Stitcher. And just ahead, as the Trump administration clamps down on refugees seeking asylum in this country, Florida's resettlement system is facing new strains. We'll tell you about it, and you can get on the line now at 549-2937. Then later, a conversation with Action News anchor John Bachman. Find out how that station is helping veterans pay off their medical debt. Plus, Culpepper evaluates the Jaguars' draft picks. That and more ahead this morning. But first this hour, a caravan of migrants from Central America has been stopped at the southern border today while authorities try to process them. It's a group of about 200 people who say they're seeking asylum in the U.S. Many of them come from violence-stricken Honduras. President Trump has described the caravan as a threat to the country and renewed calls for tighter border security. Meanwhile, the White House clampdown on the flow of refugees into the U.S. has triggered the closure of nearly half of Florida's resettlement offices and is threatening to strain state resources as well to cover the needs of those who come here seeking asylum. One resettlement office that's been greatly impacted by the policy change is World Relief of Jacksonville. It's one of three local agencies in town in the business of helping refugees coming here to Florida. Travis Trice is with World Relief Jacksonville, and he joins us now with more about the update on the situation in Jacksonville and Florida, and he's taking your calls too. Travis Trice, always good to have you on the show. Good morning.
It's great to be here. Thank you.
And as the Supreme Court hears oral arguments on President Trump's travel ban, as those saying they're seeking asylum are stopped at the southern border this morning, and as Florida's system is strained, we want your calls about this. What are your questions and comments about this country's policy on refugees? Give us a call at 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online, send your emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax. And we want your comments as well on our First Coast Connect Facebook page. And so, Travis Trice, you're with World Relief Jacksonville. And in the wake of President Trump's travel ban and just a shift in federal policy, your agency, World Relief, has had to adapt and evolve to some major changes in the way that you do your work. Tell us how, in the last 6 months or so, you've been affected by these policy changes and what this means for World Relief.
Well, I mean, right off the bat, funding is a huge challenge that we're continuing to face. And just to lay the groundwork for those listening, I always like to start out by just identifying what it is we do and who are refugees. Today, we're looking at 200 migrants at the border, I think Southern California coming out of Tijuana. They may be, their story may relate to a refugee story, but the refugees through the United States Refugee Resettlement Program are registered refugees who have applied to become refugees, who have been vetted, background checked. Most of them have spent an average of 17 years waiting to come to the United States. And these are the refugees that we work with. It's important to differentiate them from just immigrants who are seeking to do a family reunification or maybe better themselves financially, getting another job in another country. Those are immigrants, but refugees have been specifically persecuted for reasons of race, religion, nationality, membership of a social group, or political opinion. So these are who refugees are, and they have to register. There is a process. They are not illegal. They are here through a federal program that has a rich history in this country, and these are the people that we serve. And just so people can understand the timeline, when the Obama administration was leaving office, and by the way, this is a very unique legislative program as well. The president alone has this decision of how many refugees we're going to let in. And historically, you know, we've worked with presidents on both sides of the aisle. And generally, there will be a number set by a president, and then that is who we staff and budget for. Not just World Relief, but all resettlement agencies in the United States. So we were told to staff and budget for 110,000 arrivals, which you may be listening and say, wow, that's a lot. But I mean, if you look back in the, you know, the 80s and 90s, I mean, there were years where we did upwards of 200 plus thousand refugees.
In Jacksonville?
In the United States.
In the United States, Yeah. Sorry. Okay, so you were told to staff and budget for 110,000 arrivals coast to coast.
Coast to coast, yeah.
But actually the cap is now much smaller, isn't it? It's 45,000.
Correct. It was set at 45,000 last September. And the even more difficult part is we're not even on track to do that number. In fact, I would be surprised if we, you know, reached over half of that. I can give you some numbers. Right now, nationally, we are at 10,548 resettled refugees.
For fiscal year 2018.
Yeah, and the fiscal year, remember, starts in October. So we are already, you know, halfway there. And I should also mention we've also received about 8,020 SIVs, which are kind of lumped in with refugees. SIVs are special immigrant visas. If you're wondering who that is, that these are our people overseas who have served the U.S. government, who have helped with intelligence. They've served as military interpreters. And as a result of them serving our men and women in uniform, their lives have been threatened, or they've had family killed and lost. And so we do have the special immigrant visa program for them as well.
We'll go to your calls for Travis Trice of World Relief Jacksonville in just a moment at 549-2937. Okay, so the flow of refugees coming into this country has slowed to a trickle. Certainly, President Trump won election in part on that campaign promise. Now, at the same time, Florida last year had 25 refugee resettlement offices. That number is now 13 because there's been such a sharp reduction in the number of refugees. Some of those facilities that have closed have had to refer refugees to DCF, the Department of Children and Families. If more refugee resettlement offices close, like yours, Travis, World Relief, or if there is any other change, that's going to explode their caseload and strain the system further. That's my understanding. Your organization, World Relief, had to shut down its offices in Miami and Tampa due to the drop in caseloads, but the Jacksonville office is the busiest refugee relocation office in the state. People might not realize that.
It does feel that way. And that's the thing, you know, numbers may be low. Our local numbers right now, it is kind of crazy. I've been working there for about 6 years, and we've received 59 people so far, and that's not a lot. We're used to, you know, upwards of a couple of hundred by now, and it's just not a whole lot. And yes, the Miami office did close. Tampa is closed as well. We're the last World Relief in the state of Florida. I'm here to tell people we're here to stay. Our home office is located in Baltimore. You know, we've had multiple talks with them, and we're here to stay. There's a lot of things that I don't think people realize that World Relief does. And I can say the same about Lutheran and Catholic Charities as well. Yeah, there's a lot of other programs.
Right. Lutheran Social Services and Catholic Charities of Jacksonville also help resettle refugees. And what you do, it's my understanding, is that you find refugees employment, medical treatment, and housing assistance, and it's pretty short term. You just said you've been dealing with several dozen refugees this year. Tell us a little bit about their backgrounds and their stories.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of sad because when we look at the news, we see Syria. It's in its seventh year of its civil war. We've seen chemical weapons attacks, and now there are no more Syrians allowed here. So I get asked a lot, who are refugees coming? If you look at just the past, you know, 5 years or so, you could probably count 19 countries. But now we're seeing mostly Ukrainians, Eritreans. If you're wondering where Eritrea is, it's on the east coast of Africa. It used to be part of Ethiopia. And we're also seeing, of course, our Burmese population still, some Iraqis, SIVs from Afghanistan, And that's, you know, a couple of Colombians as well. So we're still receiving, you know, a multitude of people from many different countries. And another thing I'd like for people to know is that World Relief, even though when you look at the resettlement program, and these, by the way, these programs are universal. They are set by the federal government. We have a requirement of 90 days where, you know, we take these 90 days and we are responsible for housing. I mean, we're right there at the airport when they land. We need to be there with an interpreter. We like to have a volunteer team trained and at the airport as well to greet and welcome the family. And what a powerful message to send to these refugees coming here, that we want them here, that this is a welcoming city, and that we want to help them move towards self-sufficiency and integration. But World Relief has so many programs that go beyond 90 days of resettlement. And, you know, so there are some safety nets.
Like what?
Well, there's IAS, which I apologize for all the acronyms, but it's Integrated Assistance. Basically, we have some single mothers who are widowed, who have children, and 90 days, I'm sorry, but it's too much to expect for them. And, you know, they will get casework. They will receive a caseworker who will, you know, help them through their difficulties. We do have some who are physically disabled, mentally disabled, and there are safety nets for these people, and there are programs for these people. We don't just leave them on their own. I've seen that said a lot, and that's just simply not true. And we have some wonderful programs. We have another department called JRCS, Jacksonville Refugee Community Services, which is amazing because we're empowering former refugees who are basically starting these community groups and helping their people groups through interpretation services, employment assistance. I mean, there's just, the list goes on and on. We've got a soccer league for
refugees.
A little
bit of everything, okay.
Yeah, it's incredible.
And what are your thoughts about this nation's immigration and refugee policy, particularly the changes that we've seen over the last year and a half? As we talk with Travis Trice of World Relief Jacksonville, we'll go to your calls in a moment at 549-2937. Give us a call. Kevin tweets the show, "So grateful for the humble and hard work of World Relief Jacks. Thank you for highlighting these unsung heroes." You've got a lot of fans out there, Travis.
Oh, thank you, Kevin.
What would you say to those listening who might say, look, I want a clampdown on refugee resettlement. I like this change. And, you know, I'm sorry to hear that these agencies are struggling, but you know what? I think this is a good thing. And I'm sure you get that feedback. What would you say to those listeners?
Yeah, I mean, congratulations. It's happening. I would say, you know, when I first started this work, I started as a volunteer. And if you've never met a refugee, I would hold your opinion until you meet a refugee family. I respect the fact that we want to be a safe and sovereign country. We're not against that. We just don't believe that security and you know, and our safety and but also compassion. We don't believe that these two things are incompatible. We believe that we can have both security and compassion. And we have. That's the thing. We've had it for 40 years. I mean, Albert Einstein was a refugee. You know, he came in before the formal program was administered. But, you know, you look at the Miami Heat. We had Lou Aldang, a great basketball player. He's a refugee, South Sudan. And right here in our own community in Jacksonville, I mean, you don't have to look far to see the benefit of having refugees in our community. And I really encourage people, before you make maybe a political or a policy, you know, opinion, get to know some refugees. Come and visit us. We are very open to the public. We actually utilize a lot of people from local churches, local colleges, businesses that their lives are changed as a result of meeting refugees. And we would love for you to come out and experience that as well.
Let's go to some calls now. 549-2937. Samuel on the West Side. Hi, Samuel. Go ahead.
How you doing?
Hey, good. Go ahead.
I was just saying that this one guy I was just listening to, he seems to be so concerned about the refugees coming into the country and taking care of all of their needs, all of their sick problems, all of their financial problems. Jacksonville is full of that, of our just native people that's from here that's not being taken care of and don't seem to be really, people don't seem to really care about. So I think we should take care of our own country my own people before we start worrying about other people so much.
Okay. Thanks for that. All right. So the sentiment of why not minister to people that are already here struggling before worrying about those coming in from overseas. What's your response to that caller?
My response is that there is a lot of great organizations here in the city, some of whom, by the way, we do partner with, you know, but there are, I don't like the sentiment of let's rank the biggest needs in our world or even in our city. You know, whether you're volunteering at a women's shelter or at a homeless shelter, or you're doing community service work, volunteering in schools, there are so many good ways to get involved. And I don't like to get into ranking them, but, when it comes to refugees, remember, you know, a lot of these refugees are U.S. citizens now. They are us. They, you know, they're eligible for citizenship after 5 years. Immigration is at the heart of who America is. And, you know, I don't like the sentiment of trying to rank what's the greatest cause. If you want to help veterans, do it. I do it on my own time. I volunteer at a women's pregnancy center. I was adopted. And, you know, I think that there's a powerful story there. I recently met my biological mother, and, you know, we try to minister to moms.
Oh, very
who are,
nice.
Yeah, so, you know, I'm not trying to talk myself up, but what I'm saying is I think everybody has a responsibility in their community. Whether you volunteer with us, with refugees or not, get involved. You know, there are needs out there. I'm acknowledging Samuel's, you know, comment there. And my response is get involved where your heart leads you, you know?
Larry is downtown right now. Hi, Larry. Good morning.
Good morning. A couple of comments. First of all, the gentleman just called about we have the poor here that need help. If we wait until everybody in this country that needs help here, we will never accept one refugee. And this people forget, if they know anything about the history of this country was built on refugees. And for the life of me, I don't understand the hysteria about refugees and about security. We heard this in World War II about the Germans. We turned them away because there could be German spies or someone who's going to hurt us in here. And you would think that we would learn from history, but it seems like we haven't. And the last thing I want to say is this. All those Christians that go to church every Sunday, including, you know, people who really feel the need to go to church and they're Bible-based, how can every church in this country not take at least one family in, find them a job, a place to live, nurture them until they get on their feet? I don't understand it. That's all my comments.
All right, Larry, thanks for that. Jeannie is in Atlantic Beach. Go ahead, Jeannie.
Hi, I work for Lutheran Social Services as a volunteer in their refugee resettlement program. And I just wanted to say that I work with an SIV family from Afghanistan who helped our U.S. military with logistics for a couple of years until their family was targeted. And I get so much back from them. I mean, they have such a rich culture. They're highly educated people who gave up their entire lives over there because they helped us. And then they came here. They're a family of eight. They have six children. And they're in a tiny two-bedroom apartment just trying to, you know, get by. They've taken very menial jobs to support themselves when they're highly educated people who had thriving careers in Afghanistan. And within 3 months, they have done more than I see many Americans even doing just to lift themselves up by their bootstraps. And I think people have this vision of refugees that they come here and they just take, when that is just not the case.
Yeah. Thanks for sharing that as well, Jeannie. Okay. So those are important perspectives. We have a few more on the line. Let's get them on the air. Arvid in Arlington. Go ahead, Arvid. Thanks for calling.
Yeah. Thank you. That's a great program. Thank you. I was a refugee resettlement coordinator for Lutheran Social Services from 1988 to 1995.
Okay, we're having trouble hearing you. Are you on a speakerphone?
No.
Okay, just speak up a little. Go ahead.
Okay, anyway, I worked in refugee resettlement for Lutheran Social Services for 8 years back in the late 80s and 90s. And Jacksonville is a town that has always made the refugees welcome. And our agency also had a great deal of the programs for American U.S. citizens who had also were in need of assistance. But the refugees, our main goal was for them to attain self-sufficiency in a limited amount of time, which they do. And they don't have very long in order to get seek employment and to become self-sufficient because of the flow of refugees that were coming in. We always had to deal with the new arrivals. But Jacksonville, Florida, it was a great town for refugees. They were always welcome. We were the first site in America to resettle people in 1992 from the Bosnian conflict. And I just wanted to make mention that the refugee program is a great program and very valuable, and the community should be proud.
Thanks, Arvid. I didn't realize that about the Bosnian refugees. And so lots of calls on this, Travis, and it's interesting to get the perspective of people calling in who've actually done the kind of work you do. Mm-hmm. And that can really widen someone's point of view on this. And so, as you've been telling us, World Relief Jacksonville is the biggest resettlement program of its kind in the state of Florida. You are trying to keep going and do this important work, and there are a couple of important events coming up. What's happening?
Yeah, well, if we're the biggest, that's kind of sad, but I guess so. Once again, we needed donations and support before all of this. A lot of our programs are not 100% funded by the federal government. They've never been. In fact, that's been the way it's been designed from the beginning. It's a public-private partnership is what it is. We're called VOLAGs, Voluntary Agency. And the federal government is basically saying, okay, if Jacksonville wants to be a city of refuge, then we'll resettle refugees there and we'll pay to a degree for their resettlement services. And in fact, I mean, I get people that ask all the time about the funding, and I can break it down for you. The numbers are, we receive about, there's $200 that come in, and that money can be used for flex funds for any clients. There's about $925 that come in per client, in other words, per refugee. And then there's $1,000 in admin that comes in per person. So that means that $925 has got to stretch for this one. If it's a single, that's sometimes the most difficult. Have you ever paid your bills for 3 months on $925? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's very difficult. So what if somebody donates a couch or groceries or this or that? Then all of a sudden we've saved that person that money that doesn't have to come out of their funds, and we can save it for JEA. A lot of times they call us and say, who is JEA? Why do they want our money? You know, they're paying bills for the first time. And we have volunteers that help walk them through that. So that being said, we do more than ever need volunteers. And we need financial support. I used to be able to go and visit churches and colleges and say, leave your wallets in your pocket. I just want your hearts. But now we do need that funding. We desperately need it, to be honest, to continue these programs. There's a couple of ways you can get involved coming up. We've got a golf tournament coming up on May the 14th. If you want to learn more about that golf benefit, you can go to worldreliefjacksonville.org. And you'll just see the big golf banner right there. Click on there and register. It's going to be a wonderful event. It's going to be at Deerwood Country Club. We've got a silent auction as well. Tim Tebow just signed a baseball. And so we've got some great, great silent auction items there as well. And there's going to be a banquet lunch. If you're like me and you can't swing a golf club very well, just come and eat with us. The banquet is $35 a person. And $10 of that will go to World Relief. And also, I did want to mention, we have a summer camp that's coming up. And this is a very, very special program that's very near to my heart. It's for 30 children. And this is a mix of children. We just got some that have registered from Lutheran Social Services as well. So this is not just World Relief children, but 1st through 12th grade, 6 weeks. And the importance of this camp is because it provides a buffer for these children that are coming out of war zones or coming out of refugee camps. And it really helps them transition into life in Jacksonville, into life in Duval County Public Schools. And it's put on 100% by volunteers and businesses that sponsor it, and churches as well. That being said, we can't do it for free. There's fuel that needs to be, we go and transport them every morning and afternoon. So mom and dad don't have to, they're busy trying to get their feet planted, you know, and, but these precious children, do need your help. I need donations for camp. I need cash donations to pay for fuel, to pay for our electric bills. I hire a custodian to, you know, clean the place up, keep it going. We have lunches that we provide. We have field trips. Shout out to Jacksonville Zoo and Mosh for providing free tickets. Thank you.
But, got a lot of friends out there, Travis.
Yeah.
Maybe
yeah.
You'll have some more after this appearance.
Hope so. Thank you.
Yeah. Everybody go to worldreliefjacksonville.org and see how you can help Golf for the Nations. It's coming up May 14th at Deerwood Country Club. They can use your donations, your in-kind donations, your volunteer help, time, talent, and treasure. That's what we've got to do, right? Stand with the vulnerable of World Relief and go to worldreliefjacksonville.org. Travis Trice is with World Relief. Thank you, as always, for being here.
Love being here, Melissa. Thank you.
Much more still ahead later. Cole Pepper evaluates the Jaguars draft picks. But up next, speaking of helping those out in this community, veterans on the First Coast are getting a huge windfall, the payoff of their medical debt. Find out who's behind that right after this.
Nemours is not simply a place for care. Nemours is a way of caring for children. Our promise to treat each child as if they were our own means we'll do whatever is in our power to improve the health of children, regardless of ability to pay. You can help. Visit nemours.org/ourpromise.
The Florida Theater presents Ira Glass, creator and host of This American Life, live at the Florida Theater, Saturday, November 10th, 8 p.m. Using audio clips, music, and video, Ira Glass delivers a unique talk, sharing lessons from his life and career in storytelling. Ira Glass, live at Florida Theater. Tickets, floridatheater.com.
Join WJCT for Be My Neighbor Day, Saturday, May 5th, from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. at the WJCT studios. The day will include family-friendly activities, PBS Kids characters, food trucks, and so much more. The event is free, but reservations are required. For more information, log on to wjct.org/events.
Welcome back. Well, he's retiring this fall after a highly productive tenure as president of the JAX USA Partnership and executive vice president of the JAX Chamber. In today's edition of First Coast Success, our look at business success stories all around the region, Karen Bruni Mathis of the Financial News and Daily Record speaks with Jerry Malott.
Jerry Malott will retire September 1st after 24 years recruiting jobs at the JAX Chamber of Commerce. He turned 70 and leaves as executive vice president of the chamber and president of the JAX USA Partnership. Jerry, welcome to First Coast Success.
Glad to be here, Karen. We've done this many times over the years, and this will probably be our last one.
What's the biggest deal you've done during your almost quarter century in Jacksonville?
Well, you have to define deals in different ways. Probably the most impactful deal is with Fidelity National Financial, because bringing a Fortune 500 company here that ultimately is now two Fortune 500 companies plus another company that employs more than either of them is so important for any community. And incredibly high wage jobs, enormous investment in the community from the company, and the stature for our community is just really huge. But actually, in terms of total volume of jobs, it would be Amazon, who will shortly, if they're not already, up to 5,000 full-time people. A lot of people who need the jobs when we have a low unemployment rate. There are segments of the community that may still not have that low unemployment rate. So it's And having gone out and seen the operations, it's so impressive and exciting. But those two things, those two opportunities, I think, are the big deals that not just me, our team, our partners, and others help make that happen.
Can you talk about the biggest one that got away?
No. You know, there is a code in what we do. We sign confidentiality agreements, and no company, particularly a big public company, wants to say, well, we did not do that, or we were looking somewhere else, but we did it here. It kind of diminishes both the community that might have wanted if that was the case, or our. So I wish I could, but there have been some big ones that we didn't get, but there always are.
Can you talk about how far Jacksonville has come in the time you've been here, and what are the challenges to attracting jobs and capital investment to Jacksonville versus maybe the competitor cities?
Okay. Well, the change, let me start with the changes. You know, we are an incredibly vibrant city today, and I've got to give a hand to the Jaguars and many other things, the Players' Championship, for putting us on the map so much. And that really did help a lot in our abilities to attract. But we're a much more mature city, it seems to me, over this period of time. We've grown tremendously, but manageably. That is really an important thing. Growth for growth's sake is not, in my opinion, the right thing to do. But growth to keep your economy vibrant, keep people employed, expand the tax base at a pace in which you can do it and not hurt your city. I think we're all feeling a little more traffic challenges right lately, but that's also because we're building so many more roads too, expanding 295 and others. But so I think more mature, more exciting, more interesting, much better restaurants today than 24 years ago. I remember that was kind of a disappointment, like, where do you go get something good? That's not true anymore. We have lots of it. A different, wonderful place. And of course, it's nice to have the incredibly vibrant economy we have today, knowing that it does go up and down a little bit over time, but it certainly is there. And your second question?
Well, the question was, what are some of the challenges Jacksonville?
You know, interestingly enough, when companies look at us, they find almost everything very attractive. The biggest challenge they usually tell us, particularly companies from outside, are they wish we had more air service. That's always an issue. And we don't have a hub here, so it's hard to get substantial changes in our air service until our population grows, because we're only getting flights that relate to the demand we generate in the marketplace or that others want to do by coming here. We don't get other intersecting flights that would allow us a lot more. So that usually is number one, but what we try to say is you get all these other amazing benefits by being here, and maybe you have to stop once on the way to somewhere in the world. We have a tight workforce, low unemployment rate, but most everybody does too, so we don't think about that as being a huge impediment, but it forces us to do a lot more research on what a company is trying to do, what jobs they're wanting to fill, and whether we believe we would have enough capacity to be able to do that.
Jerry Mallott, retiring president of JAX USA Partnership, thank you for joining First Coast Success.
Great to be here, Karen. Thank you.
Read the full interview with Jerry Mallott later this week in the Financial News and Daily Record. Well, how about this? Action News Jacksonville is making a bold move on behalf of local veterans. They're paying off some $1 million in medical debt for 1,000 local men and women who've served. Action News Jax anchor John Bachman is here now to tell us more. Hey, John.
Hi, Melissa. Thanks so much for having us.
Thanks for being here. And there are so many veterans that need their medical debt repaid. You're meeting the challenge, $1 million going to help these people. What are some stories that you're hearing?
Well, it is a wonderful concept. Well, we talked to several veterans who are $30,000 in debt. And the project is amazing because there's this charity out there, RIP Medical Debt. And you can, it sounds like a lot. $1 million in medical debt is obviously a tremendous amount. There'll be 900 plus people in our area who get some sort of relief out of this. But the beauty of this program is you can do it with pennies on the dollar. So this charity will buy up these portfolios of debt for $10,000, you can buy $1 million worth of debt. So Action News Jax donated about $12,000 total. The charity then bought up debt for the veterans in our area.
So then you're leveraging your dollars.
It's pennies on the dollar. Most charities are doing a great job. They're doing dollar for dollar. This charity is doing pennies on the dollar.
That's amazing. Now, one local veteran that you spoke with, Sean Kelly, told you how much he still owes for medical bills. Let's listen.
We have probably paid about $30,000 of medical bills. And I think we have anywhere from $10,000 to $15,000 left.
That's just insurmountable for most people.
Yeah, these are proud men and women who have served our country. And like Sean, he has two jobs. He's working to pay off that debt. It's not like they're just looking for a handout or anything like that. These are folks who served our country, got hurt for whatever reason, and now got this looming over their head.
Yeah, and so many Americans are struggling with medical bills. That's a huge issue for civilians, too. But with our large local veteran population, this is a particularly pressing need because some of these injuries and medical problems came from their military service.
The two veterans that we talked to, that's exactly how it happened. And so, you're talking about folks who have a physical price they've paid, and now they're, of course, have this financial price as well.
Right. So Action News Jax then is relieving the debt of 1,000 local veterans. How did you choose the veterans?
Well, it's a great question. So RIP Medical Debt is able to go through the database, DOD database, to find local veterans. We don't know anything about them. We don't know the names or even what is wrong or what kind of issues they may have. We just know that they have some debt that needs to be paid. Now, what I'd love to let everybody know who's listening is, you know, we did our $12,000, but we're really now trying to campaign to try to raise more. Mm-hmm. We'd love to raise another $10,000 to $12,000 to relieve another $1 million worth of medical debt, because we kind of just did this to sort of get the ball rolling. We think this is just such an amazing program, and we would like to continue that, and hopefully we can get another $1 million relieved.
How can people contribute?
Yeah, actionnewsjax.com, of course.
Easy enough.
And then we'll link it. Now, you could go to the ripmedicaldebt.org, where they have a $50 million veteran medical debt program going, but we'd love for it to stay local. So we actually purchased an account with them so that everything you donate through actionnewsjax.com goes to local veterans. So we'd encourage you to do that.
That's such a great effort. And thanks so much for sharing it with us. It's going to mean a lot to a lot of local veterans. John Bachman, he's the anchor at Action News Jax. Catch him every night on TV. Thanks for sharing this with us.
Thank you so much.
Later, Culpepper on the Jaguars draft picks. But up next, Space 42 is busting out with a new artist in residence program. We'll tell you about that right after this.
Hi, I'm Andrew Wickman, host of Blues Horizon. The best in classic and modern blues is now on twice a week. Blues Horizon, Monday and Wednesday nights at 11, right here on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world, your music. Join WJCT for Be My Neighbor Day, Saturday, May 5th, from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. at the WJCT studios. The day will include family-friendly activities, PBS Kids characters, food trucks, and so much more. The event is free, but reservations are required. For more information, log on to wjct.org/events.
Welcome back. Well, Space 42, a creative incubator here in town in Jacksonville's Cork Arts District, is announcing something really exciting. It's a new artist in residence program. They're offering local artists and those from around the world studio space and resources and a chance to exhibit their work at the Space 42 Main Gallery. Here with more, one of the Space 42 founders, Michelle Calloway, and their first ever artist in residence, Louisa Posada Blyer. Good morning to you both.
Morning. Thanks for having us.
In a moment, we'll hear from Louisa, your first ever artist in residence. But first, Michelle Calloway, what prompted this idea?
I think something we realized was that a lot of artists need resources. And one of the resources that we have at Space 42 is space. Obviously, we're a 22,000 square foot warehouse. So I think we just decided that we wanted to offer a space for artists to work as well as exhibit.
Louisa, you're going to get to do that. You are based in Jacksonville. You're Colombian born. You're an award-winning visual artist. You've exhibited your work all over the world. And so tell us how you see this artist in residency shaping up for you.
It has been great. The whole experience has been very good. There has been a lot of collaboration. The chemistry between the people, just the energy of the space helps a lot. And Michelle and Kevin have been fantastic. So basically, I started thinking about the exhibition in the space, within the space, working there.
And it's a huge space. I've been to Space 42, 22,000 square feet. It's a former industrial factory space. Now, you work with architectural sculptures. You use wood and other mediums. You do screen prints, and people can come and see your work at an upcoming exhibit, which is pretty exciting, coming up later this week, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Tell us about the exhibit, Michelle.
The exhibit is on May 3rd, which is this Thursday at 7 p.m. It's open to the public, and we would love to see everybody come out. And it will be obviously showcasing Louisa's latest works, which is over 20 pieces of new work that she created inside the space.
Wow. Now, after her exhibit ends in June, you're going to keep the Artist in Residency program going. Is that right?
Yes, we want to continue. The joy of having the artist work in the space is it gives us direct access to the artist while we're working together, so we can create content about the artist. I've done a little bit of behind the scenes videos of them working, of her working. So the space kind of allows that to happen.
And let's share a little bit more about Space 42 more generally, what you're doing with that space, because you and your husband, Kevin Calloway, you came, he was born in Jacksonville, moved away to LA, met you. You came back to Jacksonville. You found this amazing vacant factory space, and you're doing some pretty exciting things there. What else is going on over there?
Correct. I guess we've decided to call it a creative incubator, which is amazing, but it allows us to do things such as art shows. We also have a pop-up space, so it allows local artists to come in and kind of set up for the day or for the week and kind of share with the community the things that they're creating. We're also working on an outdoor cafe, so we will be able to serve coffee to the community. We've also recently launched our farmers market, which is every Wednesday at Space 42 from 4 to 7 p.m. It's all local vendors, fresh food. And then obviously in alignment with the art is also the technology side. So Kevin's office for his company, Ihana, is based out of there. We do a lot of tech projects. We work with STEM to do local web crew, to help children, to connect with the community in any way that we can creatively through technology as well.
Doing a lot. But in the meantime, the big thing this week is the chance to come see your work, Louisa. I would think for any artist, getting a residency is a pretty big coup. Not every artist gets this, right?
No, that's right. And what I was telling you is when you work in certain space with certain materials, because they're just there, and certain people, it makes the whole, it changes everything.
Yeah,
you know, it's what you have, and it has been really, really interesting, the process.
I'm interested to see it. Come see Louisa's first solo show in the United States, actually, this Thursday night, May 3rd, at Space 42, 7 p.m. They're located at 2670 Phyllis Street in Riverside in the Cork Arts District. If you've never been, you need to go check it out. So, Louisa, thanks for being here. Michelle Calloway, thank you for being here. We'll be
Thank
right.
you so much.
Thank
we'll
you.
Be right. We'll be right back.
The Florida Theater presents Ira Glass, creator and host of This American Life, live at the Florida Theater, Saturday, November 10th, 8 p.m. Using audio clips, music, and video, Ira Glass delivers a unique talk sharing lessons from his life and career in storytelling. Ira Glass, live at Florida Theater. Tickets, floridatheater.com.
40 years ago, an expensive new Capitol complex was built to make sure that Florida state government remained in Tallahassee. I'm Ben Brotmarkle, and coming up on Florida Frontiers, the weekly radio magazine of the Florida Historical Society, we'll look at the history behind the expansion of the Florida state capitol. We'll discuss the letter book of Governor John Milton and talk about the history of drive-in theaters. That's Florida Frontiers, Monday evening at 6:30 on 89.9 WJCT.
On the next Fresh Air, Alex Wagner, contributor to CBS News and The Atlantic and former MSNBC anchor. Wagner was curious about the roots of her mixed race ancestry, so she used her reporting skills to investigate, digging through archives and getting multiple and conflicting genetic tests. She'll tell us what she found. Her memoir is Future Face. Join us.
Weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
Chances are your hometown newspaper is struggling, or at least worried about its future. It's not just about new tech changing the economy. A growing number of local reporters say their paper's owners are extracting unreasonable profits. Now, some journalists are taking a stand. What does it mean for journalism and for you? Next time on 1A. Weekdays at 10 after First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
Welcome back. Well, finally this hour, the Jaguars draft is in the books. And will the players they selected make a difference this season?
I'm a pepper, he's a pepper, she's a pepper, we're a pepper. Wouldn't you like to be a pepper too?
You might have guessed that our own Cole Pepper has some thoughts on that and more sports news and notes. He's on the line right now. Hey, Cole.
Good morning, Melissa. Yeah, I think everybody was a little bit surprised, including the Jaguars, on Thursday when the first round of the draft came through, that Taven Bryan, the Florida defensive tackle, was available to them at the 29th pick. He was a guy who was projected to be something around the 20th or 22nd pick of the draft. But Bryan, although he doesn't address an immediate need, does bring a great deal of athleticism and a work ethic to the position. You know, the Jaguars are loaded on the defensive line. It might be their most talented position top to bottom, but Bryan is going to add more to that. And he was just the start of things for the Jaguars. In the second round, they took the wide receiver out of LSU, DJ Chark, who is the fastest wide receiver in the combine this year and the sixth fastest to run the 40-yard dash in the last 10 years at the combine. So some deep speed there. And Ronnie Harrison, the Alabama safety, was the third-round pick. The rest of the picks will have a chance to compete, but it's going to be tough for a lot of these guys make a big-time impact on the Jaguars this year because the roster is just so much better than it has been in past years. Bryan was introduced on Friday, and after the press conference, I talked to his father, Brandy, about how Taven learned about work ethic and self-reliance growing up in Wyoming, and he told me this story.
I had him at 9 years old, and I was doing a concrete job out on a ranch, and the ranch manager had like 16 or 18 high school kids working, and so my son was down there breaking concrete with a 16-pound sledgehammer. And so the ranch manager sends his high school kids down, and they kind of stand around and let him do the work. And then later on that night, the ranch manager walks up and said, "Hey, can I use your kid for a minute?" And so I'm like, "Yeah." And he pulls him over there and he says, "If I see this young man outwork you high school athletes one more time," he says, "Oh, I'm going to fire all of you, and we're going to replace you."
That was nine-year-old Jason Bryan doing that, looking at a big sledgehammer. So a little bit of a Paul Bunyan-esque kind of fail, but I think it tells you a lot about his makeup as a player. Sounds like a Tom Coughlin, Doug Marone kind of player. So let's answer a couple of questions about the draft. First, was it a good one? On the surface, I would say yes. It was not as obvious a draft as, say, last year when the Jaguars selected two immediate starters in Leonard Fournette and Cam Robinson. But again, when you're picking at 29 compared to the top five, you have a better team, fewer holes to fill, tougher to find impact players. That being said, the Jaguars may have drafted as many as four players who could be starters by the time 2019 rolls around, and some of the early picks like Bryan and Chark should contribute right away as reserves. Secondly, what did the Jaguars not do in the draft? They did not find a replacement for Paul Presley. They probably would have liked to have landed a tight end, but all in all, I think it's a very good draft. This is one of those drafts that, Melissa, we probably won't know for sure for about 2 or 3 years just how good a draft it was.
Sure. Now, as you follow this, you know, it's nice to see all the local names, guys who played for Bowles and Trinity and places around town, Ed White, you know, guys that have played locally, you know, get the nod in the draft. That's cool to see as well.
Yeah for sure. Hayden Hurst from Bowles went to the Ravens in the first round. Carolina, interestingly, selecting three local high school players or former high school players, taking University Christian linebacker Marquise Haynes, Trinity Christian
linebacker Andrew Smith, and Trinity Christian defensive tackle Kendrick Norton, and Javon Wims, the former Ed White product with Carolina, in the seventh round.
Okay, let's talk another sports, quick sports news and notes before we let you go. Last night, the Armada opened their first season in the National Premier Soccer League against Miami.
Yeah, against their old NASL rivals in the Miami 1-1 draw on Saturday. The Armada will be back to play at home on Sunday. They take on the Villages SC in the U.S. Open Cup. Then they won't be back home until June. Meanwhile, the Sharks stumbling out of the gates. They lost their third straight, falling to Carolina on Saturday, 55-21. The Sharks are on the road to face the Maine Mammoths on Saturday, and they'll be back home 2 weeks from Saturday. And then the Jumbo Shrimp wrap up the five-game series against Pensacola today at 12:05. The team will be back to the baseball grounds until May the 7th.
Okay, always busy in the sports world. Culpepper, always good to have you every Monday. Thanks for being here.
Thanks, Melissa.
That's our show today. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Kevin Mershart. Michelle Corum runs the board during the hour. The show theme is composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony's Pyotr Chevchik. 1A's up next with a look at plotting a route for local newspapers. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT FM Jacksonville. Your community, your world. We'll be back again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. And if you're listening to our rebroadcast tonight at 8 o'clock, just stay tuned for music. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.